You're on Alive 90.5. You're on Spotlight, a show that tries to tell the story about people in their lives, personally and professionally. I'm really delighted to have in the studio as a person who I respect immensely, a person who I've known for probably 15 years, 20 years, and during that time have learned a lot about what he contributed to the community in which I was very actively involved, and that's none other than, respectfully, Minister David Elliott, but my good friend David Elliott. Thanks for being with us this morning, David.
Thanks, Jim. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Well, I've kindly going to get about 18 minutes out of you, and we're going to do it in about two parts. And the first part, I want our listeners to know about your story, because your story is a very strong story. You've done many things, you had wonderful parents, and I think that's a very important prelude to where you are today. So tell us about you growing up.
Well, it was quite unremarkable, really, and I grew up in Western Sydney around Picnic Point and Bankstown, working class parents, ideals and credentials, but I was very fortunate that both my parents and my grandparents, particularly my grandmother, had a very strong focus on education. And so even though nobody in my family had ever gone to university before, she used to inspire me to read history and to learn about current affairs. And my parents would often talk about current affairs and history, and Dad being an accountant at a local factory, we spoke about economics and business a lot. So that inspired me to actually go to university. And nobody in my, as I said, nobody in my family had ever gone before. And I went into, and I studied history at university, and that gave me a lot of opportunity. I was the first year that university became a university. It was my first year there at the old Milperra campus. It also inspired me to get interested and involved in politics. So at 16, I actually joined the Young Liberals, and it wasn't something that a lot of Bankstown kids did. The Liberal Party, particularly under the first John Howard leadership, sort of inspired me and appealed to me because of the whole concept of work ethic, took that opportunity and actually ended up working as a university student, working part-time in John Howard's office.
And tell us about that. Must have been an amazing experience, because at that time you were relatively young. He was very active in the party and the government. What was that like? Would have been an exciting time.
Oh, it was. It really was a dream come true. I was still 19 years old working in his electorate office, and he only had, at that stage, he was the shadow minister for industrial relations, because it was after he'd lost the leadership the first time before he'd been re-elected. So, I was very much a dog's body. Did everything: press releases, community events, mail outs, constituent inquiries, all that sort of stuff. So, I got to live in the shadow of John Howard for four full years through two elections, and hear him speak and hear him speak off the cuff and hear him make wonderful contributions to the parliament, and what I believed with him was just a logical approach to public policy, and I think that was a great apprenticeship. I didn't hang around politics. I didn't really come back to politics, with the exception of 18 months working for Peter Collins. I didn't come back to politics for nearly 20 years.
Yeah, because your life then went on another journey, which was a really interesting journey, because out of that journey became relationships and so on. Tell us about those particular events.
Well, when I stopped working for John Howard, I graduated from university and finished up working for him, and I had this burning ambition to join the army, be a regular army officer. But ironically, the interest in politics and public affairs sort of skewed me, and I ended up doing a master's degree in communications. And when I was in the army, when I finally got into Duntroon, I actually went into the army public affairs corps. So it was interesting, not something that as a boy when I dreamed of being a soldier, it's not something I thought I would do. But I ended up with that degree, with that qualifications, with that experience. I was very fortunate enough to get commissioned into the Army Public Affairs Corps. and which eventually led me to an overseas posting, an opportunity to go to Bougainville as a peacekeeper. So I'm very grateful for the experience that the Australian Army gave me in both paying for my master's degree, getting through through a scholarship through the Army, getting commissioned and going through Duntroon, and then, of course, being deployed as a peacekeeper.
And David, I hope you don't mind me calling you David, because this is the personal part, and respectfully, when we do the ministerial part, it'll be minister. But David, what did the Army teach you during that time? Because remember, listeners, David is still very young. He's forging a career in the Army and learning lots and lots of things.
I think when I look back at my life today, I think the Army taught me resilience and perseverance. I remember when I arrived, as much as I was passionate to go peacekeeping, and you know, it's like you, Jim, when you learning to be a teacher and never being able to teach. Mm. I was an Army officer. I'd trained, I'd done a number of courses, and I hadn't been deployed yet. And at that time, there were operations going on. It was before 9/11, but there was a lot going on in East Timor, and we had soldiers deployed. Mm-hmm. There were Middle Eastern deployments. We had soldiers in Rwanda and Somalia, and I hadn't gone anywhere yet. So I was very keen to go on an overseas operation. But when I got there, I remember vividly, and it's imprinted in my brain, I got to Bougainville, and I looked at my essentially tent where I was to live for the next 5 months, or we thought at the time 6 months. And I remember thinking to myself, what have I done? I've arrived in this third world country. There'd been a 10-year civil war where 7,000 people had died, and I'm living in these conditions.
It's lawless.
There was very much lawlessness. And just when you're in the military and you're on operations like that, it's just the little things that you've got to get used to. Like, you can't leave the headquarters without a radio and without communications and without your water bottles and all that sort of stuff. So you get into this routine swiftly. But I remember thinking to myself, what have I done? And on reflection, it was very much a case of, well, if I can get through this, I can get through anything. Mm-hmm. And I did. I mean, it was the resilience, whether it was when my wife was very sick with breast cancer, whether it was with the trauma that I've had over the, you know, recent times in political life, whether it be, you know, sick kids, whether it be, you know, I lost my first three pre-selections and, you know, whether do you bother getting up again? But resilience is something that the military taught me, and I was very, very grateful for that one lesson.
Well, it's been a very good lesson in the sense on reflection. It's always never understood going through the process, but upon reflection you say that helped shape who I am. Let's fast track this. You meet someone very special in your life.
Yes.
What's about her?
Well, I actually, Nicole and I got married when I was a regular Army officer. Mm. So, you know, she was the daughter of a senior police officer who married an Army officer. So, she certainly knows the smell of boot polish and how to starch a shirt. Not that she's ever starched my shirts. So I still refuse to allow anybody to do it but myself. So we got engaged as soon as I got back from Duntroon.
You thought this was good.
It was very much, and that sounds corny, but it very much was love at first sight. Yeah. We met and I pursued her for 6 months. She refused to go out with me for 6 months. I didn't give up, and then
that's the resilience from the Army.
That was even before I'd gone peacekeeping. So our first date was actually 26 years ago last Friday. So it was, and then we, then I went off to Duntroon. We got engaged, and a year later we were married.
Fantastic. And a consequence of that in marriage is two wonderful young men now. I knew them as boys. Now you've got two wonderful young men, one at university and one finishing the big exam, the HSC, this year.
Yeah, it's very easy in my line of work to lose your touch with your with friends and relatives. But I remember when I got elected, we had like what we call politician school, and we spent a couple of days listening to former parliamentarians who come and talk to all the new MPs about, you know, what the lifestyle change will be like. And even though I'd worked for a couple of politicians, I don't think I was ever prepared for it. And I remember there was a couple of good lessons from Andrew Tink, the former member for Eastwood, and a Labor MP who I've always admired, and in Michael Egan. And they both said, do not neglect your personal relationships. And I think it was Michael Egan who said, carry the friendships that you've got, you've had before Parliament, because they're normally the ones that you, they're the only ones that you'll keep after you've been in Parliament. So, and I very much took that, I very much took that at heart, particularly with the family. But yeah, I mean, all dads are probably proud of their sons, but I've got one that's at Sydney University, and he did extremely well at school last year, and he's really loving university, studying commerce. And and my second son, who more inclined like me to watch the rugby and talk about politics, he's in year 11 now, and he's ready to forge his way in the world too. So part of the best thing about turning 50 is now knowing that the next 10 years I get to enjoy to see the fruits of our labour with our kids.
Yeah, that's fantastic story, David. I want to touch on one point that I know was what I call a very moving reflection and moment in your life when you lost your dad.
Yeah, I think that was.
I hope you don't mind me asking.
No, not at all. I mean, it's funny. You don't get asked those sort of things when you're a politician, because people forget that politicians are human beings too. But it was 2 years ago. Next month.
I remember the day actually.
Yeah. So I mean, it's always difficult to reflect on the passing of parents, but. I was his only son, and he very much guided me, not only through sort of the pearls of wisdom when you're growing up, but always made sure that I had a good appreciation of the things that a young man needs to have an appreciation of, whether it be history or table manners, whether it be the need to make sure that everybody understood the rules of golf and cricket and tennis, or whether it be making sure that I could recite a few Shakespearean plays if needed to be. So he also had a strong interest and ambition for me in relation to an education, but he was an accountant, and so I always said, in the ultimate act of defiance against him, I joined the army.
Well, David Elliott, thank you for being with us this morning. I really enjoyed talking with you. Listeners, things you don't see is that I watch very carefully people's movements, their eyes, and they tell a story. They may say words, but their eyes also give relevance and depth to the stories that you've shared with us as the person, David Elliott. Thanks for being with us on 90.5 on Spotlight.
Thank you, Jim. Always a pleasure.
Alive 90.5.